Estate planning is something important for all of us to be considering or be involved with our families and talking about the future. With me is Ashley Waters from Waters Law, and she, I will deem, an expert in estate planning. So, Ashley, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So, let's talk estate planning. I do not have an estate, so I don't know much about it, and I need to know why it's important. And as your normal day of business, is that a lot of what you do as a lawyer?
Yeah.
Is estate planning?
Well, so the first thing that I'm going to call you out on is you do have an estate.
Okay,
everyone has an estate.
This is why I do this show. I learn something all the time. So tell me why I have an estate.
Well, so, you know, anyone who has an asset or a liability, even just a simple bank account, is something that you need to think about. What's going to happen if you get sick? What happens if you die? So, I mean, a lot of people think that they don't need estate planning unless their estates are really large, unless they're super wealthy or have a lot of real estate. But really, everyone needs to have a plan in place for what happens in the event of their incapacity or their death. So we all need estate planning. There's good job security for me in that.
Well, that's why you're here, to talk about it and why. So, you know, we don't have kids, and we have nephews, but we don't have kids. But I technically have an estate since I have a house and have cars and property and all that. So what do I need to do to make it official?
Well, so when we do estate planning, we look at two different things. The first thing we think about is what happens in the event we become incapacitated. So you could have a car accident. You could have a diagnosis of something that renders you incapacitated. Your incapacity could be temporary or it could become permanent. But you need to have a plan in place for what happens in that event. A lot of people assume that if they become incapacitated, if they have a car accident, and they're in the hospital and they're unconscious, that their spouse, for instance, or their parents could just immediately step in and help them with their decision making, could take care of things for them. And that's just not true. So you need to have a power of attorney in place. Everyone, when you turn 18, when somebody turns 18, they need to have a power of attorney, because all of a sudden that 17, now 18-year-old kid has the right to make all their own decisions. And they need to have a document that says, well, what happens if I now become incapacitated? Who's able to step in and help me with decision making? So we want to have both a financial power of attorney and a medical power of attorney. Sometimes the people you want making sure your bills are getting paid when you're incapacitated are maybe not the same people you want making life or death decisions. So sometimes those are different skill sets. And so you can appoint different people, you know, to handle different types of decisions. So everyone needs to have a power of attorney for financial and healthcare decisions if they're 18 years of age or older.
So let me ask you a question. And, I'm thinking of how you're going to answer it. How many 18-year-olds do you see come in your office asking for a power of attorney?
Well, it's usually the parents that are calling in asking for the power of attorney for their kids. So we do a lot with our clients that we've worked with in the past. As their children age out, you know, become adults, we educate them before they're adults to tell them, hey, when they turn 18, they need to come in and sign a power of attorney. Because you send your child off to college, your kid gets sick, they're in the infirmary at school, they won't talk to you. They won't tell you what's going on. They won't tell you if they've had to send your child to the emergency room. You don't have a right automatically to know those things. So we do actually, I think this summer I've done 5 or 6 just for, you know, brand new 18-year-olds who are getting ready to head off to college because their parents want to make sure if something happens that they can step in and take care of things if they need to. Now, we do educate the kids.
Sure.
We make sure that, you know, it's not just the parent calling in saying, hey, my kid's going to come in and sign this, and then we just have them sign it and they leave. We do explain what it is, make sure they understand what they're signing, because it is a legal document. It's important that they know what it is. But, yeah, we do more than you would think. And we're just trying to educate people early in the process so as their children become adults, they know that that's an important thing for them to do.
So let's just use me as an example. I'm 45. I know I don't look it.
Not a day over 30.
Not a day over 30. Just my wife and I, right? We don't have a POA. We don't have a power of attorney, either one of us. So would it make sense if I come in to see you that I would make her my power of attorney?
It typically, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there are times where married couples come in and don't appoint each other, but that's pretty uncommon.
Right.
Typically, you'd appoint your spouse as your primary, and then you'd want to think about a backup. Well, what happens if both of you are in that car accident together? Somebody else is going to need to step in and help you. So you want to think about who that person is or those people are for you, and then who the backup is. You always want to have a contingency plan just in case.
I love this. I'm so happy you're here. I'm learning myself. So, and we got more to talk about on estate planning, but a power of attorney is a start, right?
It's very important start.
And yeah. Once that's done, what's the next steps?
So with the powers of attorney, you know, you're planning for that potential incapacity. But when you pass away, when you die, those powers of attorney are essentially null and void. You can't take that power of attorney into the bank and access somebody's bank accounts after they've passed away. So that's when you need to think about the after death side of the planning. So that's the second piece that I mentioned earlier. There's kind of two parts to it, two components. So the after death piece, you either need, most people, as kind of a foundational plan, need to have either a last will and testament or a revocable living trust. So those are kind of your two most basic options. And there are some people who do have specific assets, or the size of their estate might dictate that they need other things kind of layered on top of that foundational plan. But everyone needs to have that foundation in place, which is either a will or a trust. So.
Okay. And what's the difference between a will or a trust?
Thought you might not ask.
I have to know.
So with a will, so both documents are essentially instructions for what to do after you die. They will name who's in charge, which would either be your executor in the case of a will, or a trustee in the case of a trust, and who your beneficiaries are. So who's going to get your stuff, you know, when you die. So it's instructions, and it can be really specific or it can be more general, but instructions, who gets what, who's in charge. With a will, when you pass away, and it does depend on what assets you own and how they're titled, but when you have a will, generally we're going to have to probate your estate. With a trust, we are setting that trust up intentionally to avoid probate.
Okay.
So probate is the process. When somebody dies, there's always going to be some level of estate administration that needs to be done. There are going to be, you know, you have to get the death certificate. You're going to have to close out bank accounts. You're going to have to settle up debts. There's always going to be some level of work to be done. But probate is when that process is supervised by the court. So it's not a huge deal in Tennessee. Probate's not as scary in Tennessee as it can be in some other states. But it's not, anytime you can avoid involving the court in some of the decisions that need to be made in the process, that is usually better. So with a revocable trust, it's just a substitute for a will. So again, they do the same thing. It's just the process is different. So it's designed so that the trustee can step in and take care of things without having to involve the court or a judge in the process.
So the debt would still have to be paid, right?
Right.
But
right.
It could, instead of going through court and paying court costs or whatever that is and whatever that, how that looks, you can use the trustee or the trust to take those actions and pay everything off. And then whatever's left would go to the people that are inheriting it, right, I guess?
That's absolutely right.
And I'm not an attorney. But
you've got it.
I've dealt with it a little bit. So let me ask you this. If we, you know, as you said, the power of attorney goes away upon death, mm-hmm. right? So once I die and if my wife goes, whatever, I don't, this is morbid, but we're talking about it. And we have a will. Let's just say we have a will, and the executor is a family member, and we've give this will to, and the executor's in charge. Can they change anything in that will?
No.
Okay.
So either with a will or a trust, when you die, those documents become irrevocable. So Either a will or a revocable living trust, by definition, revocable means it can be changed or revoked. So both of those documents are modifiable. You can revise them, you can amend them, you can revoke them, you can do whatever you want while you're alive. But when you die, they become irrevocable. So someone else can't come in, like your executor, or your trustee, or a family member, or whoever, and say, well, I don't like what Ben did here. I don't think it's fair that so-and-so gets more than, you know, that other person, and so I'm going to fix it. They cannot go against your wishes. So
this is great information. And it's not personally happened in my family, but I know I've seen families get upset mm-hmm. about a will or a trust, and they don't like what's been left to them, and they want to change it. And I didn't think you could once it was in writing. But I think it's important for people to know. So,
well, and something to add to that, too, although you cannot come in and change what the will says or the trust says, an heir, beneficiary, a child, a spouse, anyone who has what we call standing, which, you know, we could go down that rabbit hole, but I'm not going to. But anyone who has standing could contest that will or contest the trust. So with a will, we call it a will contest. You file a notice with the judge once that probate's open, and the judge will decide whether to certify that will contest. And so it's really not that difficult to try to contest the will. Now, you're not necessarily trying to change it, but you're trying to get the whole thing thrown out. Now, you might allege that the person who created the will lacked the capacity to make those decisions at that time, or that they were being unduly influenced by someone, or there was fraud, or, you know, one of those types of things. Somebody can try to contest it. So with a trust, you can try to contest a trust as well, but it's more difficult to contest a trust than it is to contest a will.
Okay.
So if I have a situation where someone comes in and they're not necessarily, you know that what's equal is not always fair and what's fair is not always equal.
Right.
Right. And so if somebody, you know, maybe they're leaving the farm to this kid and some money to this kid, well, then they die and one of those children is upset that they didn't get the farm or they didn't get the money, and they try to contest it. So the trust is much more difficult to contest than the will. So if anyone's doing something like that and they're not necessarily on paper equal with the children, or they're leaving someone out, or even with a blended family, that's going to make me lean towards doing a trust, because it is stronger if somebody did try to contest it.
I think you may have answered my next question, but I'm going to ask it after this break anyway. Have Ashley Waters with Waters Law here on Local Matters. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Local Matters. Ben Rogers with Ashley Waters from Waters Law. We are talking estate planning and preparation for life changes, as you could say. So you left me a great segue. We didn't plan this, Ashley, but you're doing so phenomenal with this, and I'm learning so much. When somebody comes to your office for the first time and they want to do estate planning, or they want to make plans for the future based on incapacitation or death, and then you talk about death and the POA, the power of attorney goes away, as we discussed, and you ask them, or you recommend, or they say to you, should we do a will or a trust? Most often, what would you advise?
I would say that most often, a trust is going to make more sense for most of the clients that I see. And I see clients from all walks of life. I mean, I do pro bono work for Legal Aid Society clients, all the way up to clients with lots of millions of dollars right. in assets. And but typically a trust is better. And here's why. So a will and a trust, they're going to accomplish the same thing in just a different way. But a will, we're going to have to go to probate. So a trust is avoiding probate. So that's one benefit of a trust. Because we avoid probate, the trust, the provisions of the trust, the beneficiaries of the trust, the assets of the trust remain private. So probate, being a court-supervised process, is public record.
Sure.
And you may or may not be surprised how many nosy people will just call the clerk and find out when an estate's been opened and go check out the file and read all about it. So,
I'm not surprised.
Right. it's really not surprising.
People
but,
get bored, right?
People are nosy.
They're nosy, yep.
But, yeah, so probate avoidance also leads to privacy. So if privacy is something that you value, a trust is going to make a lot of sense. A trust is also best if you're not treating the kids equally, or you're leaving someone out, or if there's something unusual, or there's a blended family, a trust is a little bit stronger in that event. So those are the main reasons why. And typically, I mean, these days, my clients are either most people, I think, are either valuing the privacy, or they have a blended family, or there's something tricky. Or, you know, they just want to make things easier for their kids or their family that they're leaving behind. And the trust administration is easier than the probate process. Also, if you have property in multiple states, so say you own your home in Tennessee and you have a condo at the beach in Florida, or you have a house in North Carolina, when you just have a will, not only do we have to probate your estate in Tennessee, but we have to probate your estate in every state where you own real estate. We call that an ancillary probate. So the cost of the administration of the estate can jump up real quick. Sure. When you're having to hire attorneys in multiple states. Yeah. So for those reasons, most of my clients, for one of those reasons, will say, oh, no, we want to do a trust. Now, I will tell them the pros and cons of both options. I will price it both ways for them, let them make that decision on their own. But most of my clients choose to do a trust.
Would a con to doing a trust, I'm just guessing, so correct me if I'm wrong, would a con of doing a trust be putting the responsibility on somebody that may not want to deal with it, like the trustee? So I do a trust, and it goes to the trustee. I'm dead and gone. It goes to the trustee, and they're like stressed out about handling all these things that would be in probate. Is that a con?
Same issue with a will, because you're going to appoint an executor in a will. So either way, okay, you're having to designate someone to take over and handle your estate when you're gone.
Yeah.
So I believe it's really important to communicate with those people that you're putting in those roles, whether it's powers of attorney or executor or trustee, what guardian for minor children, communicate with them in advance. Let them know, hey, you know, I think I want to put you in this role. Are you okay with that? There's always a way out. So, and we're always going to have a backup plan if I'm doing it. So you're going to tell me, okay, I want so-and-so to be my executor. And I'm going to say, all right, but what if something happens to them? Or what if they can't do it? Who's your backup? What's our backup plan? So if the person who gets appointed, maybe they didn't know somebody had appointed them, or, you know, things have changed and they're dealing with too much at home and they just can't take on that responsibility when the time comes, they can always resign. They can step aside and let the next in line step in. If there's not next in line, there's always a mechanism to determine who would serve in the event that there's what we call a vacancy in that role that's not been otherwise filled. So there's always a way to deal with it. But I think if you communicate with those people in advance and make sure that they're agreeable to being appointed in those positions, that helps to avoid that issue from coming up.
And I'm sure when somebody comes to see you, you're going through all this with them.
I am, yes.
And
so
you're making sure they understand this is your executor, this should be your backup. Mm-hmm. You need to have a backup, and you may need to have a backup to the backup, right?
Because that's right.
Somebody may resign and say, I don't feel like I'm capable of handling this estate as a trustee or an executor, and I don't want any part of it.
That's right.
So I love this. So I'm going to give you a case study here. A married couple, no kids. They pass away, same time, mm-hmm. car wreck, whatever. What happens to their stuff? What happens to the assets they have?
Do they have a will or a trust or nothing?
They have nothing.
Nothing.
No will, no trust. What happens?
Well, so when you talk about a married couple that dies at the same time with no plan in place, we actually have to probate both estates if there's no will. And depending on how the assets are titled, but say they have a home and it's in both names, we'd have to probate both estates. So if you die without a plan in place, without a will or a trust, then we call that an intestate estate, I-N-T-E-S-T-A-T, intestate. That means no will. So the state of Tennessee kind of steps in and creates a will for you. And it depends. There's actually, it's called the table of consanguinity. Fancy word.
It is.
But it depends on who's alive at that time and who basically your next of kin are. So okay. If your parents were alive, then husband's half would go to his side and wife's half would go to her side, and it goes up over and down, and depends on if parents are both living or deceased and if there's siblings and nieces and nephews. And I mean, it can go, you know, it can get kind of tricky to figure out who the heir, what we call the heirs at law, are in that scenario.
So if you're a good human, you're not going to put your family in that position.
That's right. Yeah. Sometimes we even have to hire, there are companies that have been created just for the purpose, they're called heir search companies. And sometimes you have to pay them to go figure out who the next of kin are. I've seen estates with 40 plus beneficiaries. Because of a lack of planning and just, you know, maybe no children, extended family. I mean, it can get pretty crazy.
I think I may have broke some of my nephew's hearts when I was talking one day. I said, listen, I'm spending all my money while I'm alive. I don't know when I'm going to die.
You can't take it with you.
Yeah,
so
can't take it with you.
No.
I'll leave my nephews the house and the land, and y'all can split up. You can do what you want to with it. Y'all, yeah. All three can live in it. You can sell it, whatever. You ain't getting the money because I'm going on vacation. I'm going to spend it. So they laugh at me all the time. But I don't have a state. I don't have – well, I do. You said I do. I don't have a trust or a will.
Mm-hmm. So right? Your nephews aren't going to get anything.
Right. Yeah. So right. I probably need to do that at some point in time. Ashley Waters with Waters Law is here, and I'm so happy she's here talking about estate planning. We'll be back in just a moment here on Local Matters after this break. Welcome back to Local Matters. Ben Rogers with Ashley Waters from Waters Law. She has enlightened me so much talking about estate planning, having a will or trust when we leave this earth. And just, Ashley, thank you for being here. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're obviously an expert, and the knowledge has been valuable. And I know our listeners are going to appreciate it. So I'll get to probably a question people may have been asking since they've been listening is, and I can ask this for myself because, as I said early on, I don't have a will or trust. We don't. We need one, obviously. Why do people hesitate? Why aren't more people not coming in to the professionals like yourself and asking you to prepare a will or trust for them? What's the holdup?
Well, I mean, of course, every situation is going to be different. But I think my suspicion is that, one thing, is people feel like they're invincible to an extent. I think that nobody wants to think about their death or their incapacity. It's a difficult subject, and it's the type of planning that you're not really doing this necessarily for yourself. You're doing it for your loved ones, for your family, for those who you leave behind. And so, you know, I can understand not wanting to spend money. It's an investment, not wanting to invest in something that's not going to benefit you directly, but you're really doing this for those people that you're leaving behind. It's an investment for them. It's your legacy. It's what you leave for them. It's your last gift for them. So I think that there's this feeling of, well, why should I spend my time and money, you know, planning for this? They'll just figure it out. But it's not always that easy when you're gone. So I think that's a big reason why people don't come in. I think also it's just generally, I think that lawyers have a reputation and it's not always positive. And I don't think that I think a lot of people are intimidated to go into a law office. You know, you think about, you know, lawyers wearing suits and, you know, dark wood walls and briefcases and, you know, heavy mahogany. And it's just, we're not all like that.
I don't see mahogany on you right now.
No. So we're not all like that. And I, you know, we try to make it comfortable because we know that when you come into our office to talk about death and incapacity and taxes and all the things that flow from those conversations, it's a lot. You know, we talk about it every day, all day, yeah. But that's not something that when the client comes in, they're not used to talking about those things. So I think there's a level of intimidation generally with going in to see a lawyer. You're like, I don't need a lawyer. I don't want to need a lawyer, but I'm the good kind.
You are.
You know, we're the kind of lawyers, yeah, that you do need, yeah, if you're smart and if you're doing, you know, if you're making good decisions for your family and trying to help them out, you know, it's not a negative experience. It can be a positive experience.
So do your family a favor.
Do them a favor. Yeah.
Do some planning.
Mm-hmm.
And so the last couple of years, two of my closest friends have lost their fathers. And in both situations, their fathers had not planned about what happens after they pass. And the financial burden of being buried or the funeral process was left to the children.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm no judge. I'm not saying that's wrong or right, but I know it was hard for my friends, right? And this would help mitigate that.
It would, yes. If you're really doing estate planning correctly, you're thinking about assets and liabilities and future expenses. How are we going to pay for those? How do we set up the will or the trust? And how do we set up our beneficiaries on our accounts to make sure that there's money to pay those things with? And I mean, I've even advised, you know, younger families or even older families with a lot of debt, it might be wise to see about taking out a life insurance policy. Because when you die, somebody's going to have to pay that debt. Somebody's going to have to pay that funeral bill. And you don't want to leave your family, you know, in a lurch where they're having to sell something real quick to pay that debt. Or, you know, so yes, if you're truly doing estate planning the right way, you're thinking through all of those things and making sure that there's a plan and that everything's set up to flow smoothly when that person dies, regardless of whether they do a will or a trust. That's their decision. But there still needs to be a plan for taking care of those things.
I think you said it's one of the best gifts you can leave them, right, mm-hmm. is a plan.
I believe so.
Yeah, and I would agree. And that makes me want to get mine done pretty quick because I don't want to leave anybody with a burden of trying to figure out where my stuff goes. because people ain't got a clue where it's supposed to go. I don't tell anybody anything. And I'll have a lot, but, you know, there's
stuff. Well, we all know it goes to your nephews now, right?
Yeah, well, so. if they behave. Now, listen, if they get rowdy and start acting out, I'm going to change my plan. No, I love them dearly, but that's, you know, we don't have children, not having children, so that would be, but next of kin for us would be our parents. I mean, you answered my question because both of our parents are still alive, so.
Well, and something else to think about, too, is how old are your nephews?
One just turned 16. God bless everybody on the road. And the other two, are both five.
So you've got some young potential beneficiaries. So you also need to think about, well, can a 5-year old actually inherit a third of your real estate?
Right.
And yes, but no, it can get tied up in court if you don't plan properly. So within your will or your trust, you'd want to set up a trust for those young beneficiaries in case they are young whenever you pass and you want them to inherit that. It needs to be in trust for them. So somebody else who's an adult, first and foremost, but more mature and responsible can make decisions about what to do with that asset until they're old enough to make decisions on their own. So that's another thing to think about.
It's a very good point. That's great information. Are we missing anything on estate planning? Anything else we need to share before we move on?
I could talk for days about this, but no. I mean, I think this covers the basics. Basically.
So, do you? I'm sure. I mean, your knowledge is wonderful. Are you ever asked to speak anywhere and to provide this information?
I am. Yes, I don't host my own speaking engagements, but I do. I am asked from time to time to speak. I've spoken. I'm actually speaking. Well, I don't know when this will air, but next Thursday, for the UT Extension office to a group of farmers in Van Buren County about estate planning and what can we do to save the family farm. I've done lots of those over the years for the UT Extension office. Also speak to other, I'm actually co-hosting a CLE for attorneys for estate planning in September with co-hosting with the Legal Aid Society. I've spoken to groups of CPAs for continuing education on different types of trusts that we can set up and benefits with different types of trusts. So I do from time to time. I don't host my own, nothing regular or consistent, but I do. I like to educate people on this. I think that's one of our, as an estate planning attorney, I think that's one of my important kind of missions and burdens all at the same time is to educate people on what they, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of misconceptions about estate planning. And so knowledge is power, and I'm always happy to educate people so that they can make good, informed decisions.
Well, so yeah, one of the reasons I love doing this show, and thank you to Larry and Stonecon for allowing me to do it, is hopefully every time somebody comes in here, we're informing them of something they may have not known, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know a whole lot about estate planning. I do now. This is going to be heard, and that's another way to get the message out. And you doing speaking engagements or, you know, working with others to provide information to the public is a part of the way you're serving mm-hmm. as well. And I've known you for a while because we served together on Cityscape. Are you still on Cityscape? Did you roll off as well?
Unfortunately, I rolled off. I loved that board. That was a lot of fun.
A great board.
It was.
But that's, I guess, one of the, well, I knew you before that, but I got to know you, and I know you have a passion for service, and you do other things. I mean, you're on other boards. But being able to inform, especially our elder community, right, our people that mm-hmm. May not have thought about this, because, as you said earlier, it's not something that is, they don't want to think about it. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to think about dying, right? But it's reality. And so I love the fact that you're out there providing information to these folks.
Yep. And I tell people, you know, I have people come in their 80s and sometimes their 90s and they've never had a plan before. And I say, well, it's better late than never, you
well,
know?
Yeah. So. And do you ever have to, I don't know if it's your job as an attorney, if there's an ethical, but if you have somebody come in, maybe they're not in their ability, they don't have the ability to mm-hmm. make decisions. Have you ever dealt with that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
How do you handle that?
Oh, it depends. So, you know, it's in my discretion to determine whether they have the ability to form their decisions, that they understand what the decisions they're making, and the capacity to sign whatever legal document they're signing. And there's actually different levels of capacity for different legal documents. And for instance, the capacity to sign a power of attorney that's required for that is actually much higher. It's like a contract than the capacity required to execute a will. So to execute a will, I just have to confirm that the person, you know, they know what they have, that they know the natural objects of their bounty, which, you know, who their family is, who would inherit if they didn't have a will,
right,
and that they can tell me what they want. And I feel confident that they understand, you know, that. And so often, though, if I suspect there's something going on, I might ask them to obtain a doctor's note just to paper our file that says, sure, you know, where their treating physician says, no, I think that they understand enough to sign a will, or, you know, whatever. Worst case scenario, and this has happened, they come in wanting to create a will or a trust or whatever it is, and they just don't have the capacity. We may have to petition the court for a conservatorship over them, which is when you haven't planned, and particularly for your incapacity, you haven't planned, and somebody needs to help you with something and they don't have the authority to do it. So you have to go to court, and the court decides who gets the authority to help you with your decision making. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Ashley, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Glad you're here. Talked about estate planning with Ashley Waters from Waters Law. Go see her. If you got questions, you need a trust or a will, she's got great information. I promise you, she's a wonderful person and will guide you right way. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Everyone, remember, it's a lot easier to smile than it is a frown. Make somebody's day. Be kind to one another. It's the only way we get through this life. Hope you enjoyed this like I have. We'll see you next time.